He could have asked his question without ordering his secretary through, but he liked to look at her. Although she was of peasant stock from the hills, she was bright and nubile. She had done well at Taiwan University, but Cheng had not chosen her for her academic achievements. She stood to the side of his desk, close enough for him to touch if he had wished to, in an attitude of servility and submission. Despite her modern accomplishments, she was a traditionally raised girl with the correct attitude to men, and in particular to her master. "Have you confirmed the reservations with Qantas Airlines?" he asked. With Armstrong sniffing around in Lilongwe, it was as well that the return to Taipei was imminent. He would never have taken the risk of the Chiwewe adventure if he had planned to stay on at the embassy. Already his wife and family had left. He would follow at the end of the month, only 8 days from now.
"Yes, the reservations have been confirmed, Your Excellency," Li whispered respectfully.
To him her voice was as sweet as that of the nightingale in his father's lotus garden in the mountains. It stirred him. "When are the packers coming in?" he asked, and touched her. She trembled slightly under his hand, and that stirred him further.
"They will come in first thing on Monday, my lord,"
she used the traditional title of respect. Her straight black hair hung to her shoulders and shimmered with light. Cheng ran his fingers lightly up the thigh slit of her chongsam. Her skin was as smooth as the ivory Netsuka.
"You have warned them of the value and fragility of my art collection," he asked, and pinched her beneath the skirt.
He took a nip of that ivory skin between the nails of his thumb and second finger, and she winced and bit her lower lip.
"Yes, my lord," she whispered, with a catch of pain in her voice.
He pinched her a little harder. It would leave a tiny purple star on the flawless swell of her small, firm buttock, a mark that would still be there when she came to him tonight. The power of pain made him feel elated. He forgot about Dr. Daniel Armstrong and any trouble he might be brewing. For now the police were off the track and Li Wang was lovely and compliant. He had 8 days while he was separated from his wife in which to enjoy her to the full. Then he would return home to his father's approbation. Daniel unlocked the rear door of the Land Cruiser and packed the groceries and supplies that he had purchased from Chetty Singh's supermarket into his depleted tucker box. Then he went round to the cab and sat at the wheel. While he let the engine warm, he checked his notebook for the list of the Singh's other business premises. With help from a few obliging pedestrians, he found his way into the light industrial area of the town, down near the railway line and the station. Here it seemed that Chetty Singh owned 4 or 5 acres of industrial sites. Some of these were undeveloped and overgrown with rank bush and weed. On one of the vacant lots, a large signboard declared, "Another Chetty Singh project. Site of proposed cotton carding factory. Development, employment, prosperity, upliftment for Malawi." On one side of the open plot, behind a barbed wire security fence, stood the workshops of Chetty Singh's Toyota agency. At least 100 new Toyota vehicles were parked in the front lot. They were still coated with the filth of the long rail journey up from the coast on open goods trucks. Clearly, they were awaiting delivery service in the main workshop building. Through the open front doors, Daniel could see a team of mechanics at work, though the foremen appeared all to be Asians, some in Sikh turbans. Most of the overawed mechanics were black. The enterprise appeared prosperous and well-managed. Daniel drove into the forecourt and left the Land Cruiser parked at the reception bay. He spoke to one of the foremen in a blue dust coat. Under the pretext of arranging a service for the Land Cruiser, he managed to get a good look around the workshop and administration building. There was no obvious place where a shipment of stolen ivory could be hidden here. While he made a booking to bring the Land Cruiser in the following morning at 8 o'clock, he chatted casually to the workshop foreman and learned that the sawmill and the Chetty Singh Trading Company warehouse were in the next street, backing onto the vehicle workshop. He drove away and circled the block. It was easy to pick out the sawmill, even from the far end of the street. A dozen railway trucks stood at the private railway siding, every one of them piled high with heavy logs of indigenous timber cut in the heavily forested mountains. The shrieks of the circular saws carried clearly up the street. As he drove past the gates, he looked into the open sheds where the saws were housed. The spinning discs shone like quicksilver, and spurts of yellow sawdust flew from the rough logs as the blades bit into them. The resinous smell of freshly cut timber was pungent in the hot sunlight, and mountains of raw planks were piled in the extensive yards, ready to be loaded onto the waiting railway trucks. Daniel drove past slowly. Diagonally, opposite the sawmills, stood the warehouse complex. It was enclosed by a high diamond mesh fence, green plastic-coated wire on sturdy concrete poles with offset tops angled out towards the street and festooned with barbed wire. The warehouse was in five semi-detached units. The valleys and peaks of the common roof formed a sawtooth pattern of unpainted corrugated asbestos sheeting. The walls were also of the same corrugated asbestos. Each of the five units had separate doors of the roller type usually seen on aircraft hangars. And this time the signboard at the gates read, Chetty Singh Trading Company, Central Depot and Warehouse. He was certainly not shy about advertising his name, Daniel thought wryly. There was a swinging boom and a brick-built gatehouse at the entrance, and Daniel noticed at least one uniform guard at the gate. As he drew level with the last building, he saw that the tall asbestos doors had been rolled open, and he was able to look down the length of the cavernous warehouse. Suddenly he leaned forward, and his pulse accelerated as he recognised the huge pantechnicon parked in the centre of the warehouse. It was the vehicle that he had last seen on the Chirundu Road 4 nights previously. The 10-wheeled trailer, with the green tarpaulin cover, was still hitched behind it, and the red dust that coated it matched that on his own Land Cruiser. The rear doors of the trailer were open, and a team of a dozen or so black labourers, assisted by a forklift truck, were loading a cargo of brown sacks that could have contained maize, sugar, or rice. He could not see any of the distinctive dried fish bags that had been the cargo which he had seen in the Zambezi Valley. He lowered the side window, hoping for a whiff of fish, but he smelled only dust and diesel fumes. Then he was passed. He thought about making a U-turn and another passing inspection. Hell, I've drawn enough attention already, he told himself, like the circus coming to town. He drove back to the Capitol Hotel the way he had come, left the truck in the guest's car park and went up to his room. He ran a bath, as deep and hot as he could stand it, and soaked the dust and grime of the African roads out of his pores, while his skin turned a rich puce. As the water cooled, he twiddled the tap with his toe, adding fresh steaming gouts. At last he stood to lather his nether regions and regarded himself seriously in the dewy mirror over the washbasin. "Look here, Armstrong, the sensible thing to do is go to the police with your suspicions. It's their job. Let them get on with it." "Since when, Armstrong?" he replied. "Did we ever do the sensible thing? Besides, this is Africa. It will take the police 3 or 4 days to stir their butts, and Mr. Singh has had quite enough time already to get rid of any ivory he may just have lying around. By tomorrow it'll probably be too late to catch him at it." "You are trying to tell me, Armstrong, that time is of the essence?" "Precisely, old chap. It couldn't be that you'd enjoy a touch of cloak and dagger, a bit of boy scouting, a spot of amateur sleuthing." "Who, me? Don't be silly, you know me." "Indeed I do," he agreed with a wink at his image, and subsided back into the steamy suds, which slopped over the bath rim onto the tiled floor. The dinner was a vast improvement on his last public meal. The fillets of bream were fresh from the lake, and the wine was a delicious Hamilton Russell Chardonnay from the Cape of Good Hope. Reluctantly, he rationed himself to half the bottle. "Work to do," he muttered ruefully, and went up to the room to make his preparations. There was no hurry. He couldn't move until after midnight. When he was ready, he lay on the bed and enjoyed the sensation of excitement and anticipation. He kept looking at his wristwatch. It seemed to have stopped, and he held it to his ear. The waiting was always the worst part. Chetty Singh watched the security guards usher the last customer from the supermarket and close the double glass doors. The wall clock pointed to 5:10. The sweepers were already at work, and his daughters were busy at the tills, cashing up the day's receipts. The girls were as devout as virgins ministering at the altar of some arcane religion, and his wife stood over them as dignified as the high priestess. This was the high point of the daily ritual. At last the procession left the tills and made its way across the shop floor in strict order of precedence, his wife leading and her daughters following, the eldest first and the youngest last. They entered his office and laid the day's take on his table, neatly banded bundles of currency notes and canvas bags of coins, while his wife handed him the printouts from the tills. "Oh, good," Chetty Singh told them in Hindi. "The best day since Christmas Eve, I am sure." He could recite the figures over the last 6 months without consulting his ledgers. He entered the take in the day book, and while his family watched respectively, locked the cash and credit card vouchers into the big chub safe built into the back wall. "I will be late home for dinner," he told his wife. "I must go down to the warehouse to attend to certain matters." "Papaji, your meal will be ready when you return." She clasped her hands to her lips in a graceful gesture of respect, and her daughters imitated her example and then filed from his office. Chetty Singh sighed with pleasure. They were good girls, but if only they had been boys. It was going to be the devil's own job finding husbands for all of them. He drove down to the industrial area in the Cadillac. The car was not new. Dearth of foreign exchange would not permit an ordinary citizen to import such a luxurious vehicle. Chetty Singh had, as always, a system. He contacted newly appointed members of the American diplomatic staff before they left Washington. Malawi customs regulations allowed them to import a new car and sell it locally at the end of their term. Chetty Singh paid them twice the US value of the Cadillac in Malawi kwacha on arrival. They could live in princely style on this amount for the full 3 years of their tour in Malawi, while still retaining use of the car and saving their official salaries. When they left, Chetty Singh took over the vehicle, ran it for a year, until the next arrangement matured, at which time he placed the Cadillac on the showroom floor of his Toyota agency with a price tag of 3 times its original US value. It was usually sold within the week. No profit was too small to despise, no loss was too small to abhor. It was not by accident that over the years Chetty Singh had amassed a fortune, the full extent of which not even his wife could guess at. At the warehouse gates, Chawi swung open the boom to allow him to drive the Cadillac through. "Yes?" Chetty Singh asked the big Angoni. "He came," Chawi replied, "as you said he would. He drove by on this road at 4:10. He was in the truck with the man's arm painted on the door. He drove slowly and he was staring through the fence all of the time." Chetty Singh frowned with annoyance. "This chap is becoming an absolute pest, never mind," he said aloud. And Chawi looked bemused. His English was rudimentary. "Come with me," Chetty Singh ordered, and Chawi climbed into the back seat of the Cadillac. He would never be so presumptuous as to sit beside his master. Chetty Singh drove slowly along the front of the warehouse complex. All the tall doors were already closed and locked for the night. There were no burglar alarms guarding the area. At night even the perimeter fence was unlit by floodlights. There had been a period 2 or 3 years back during which he had suffered from repeated burglaries and break-ins. Alarms and floodlights had done little to prevent these depredations. In desperation, he had consulted the most famous Sangoma in all the territory. This old witch-doctor lived in dread isolation up on the top of the misty Makhlanya Plateau, attended only by his acolytes. For a fee commensurate with his reputation, the witch-doctor descended from the mountain with his entourage, and with great fanfare and ceremony he placed the warehouse under the protection of the most powerful and malevolent of the spirits and demons that he controlled. Chetty Singh invited all the idlers and loafers of the town to witness the ceremony. They watched with interest and trepidation as the witch-doctor decapitated a black cockerel at each of the 5 doors of the warehouse and sprinkled its blood on the portals. After this, to suitable incantations, he placed the skull of a baboon on each corner post of the perimeter fence. The spectators had been much impressed, and the word spread swiftly through the townships and the beer halls that Chetty Singh was under magic protection. For 6 months thereafter, there were no further break-ins. Then one of the township gangs worked up the courage to test the efficacy of the spell, and they got away with 12 television sets and nearly 40 transistor radios. Chetty Singh sent for the witch doctor and reminded him that his services carried a guarantee. They haggled until finally Chetty Singh agreed to buy from him at a bargain price the ultimate deterrent. Her name was Nandi. Since Nandi's arrival, there had been only a single break-in. The burglar had died in Lilongwe Hospital the following day, with his scalp ripped off his skull and his bowels bulging out of the rents in his belly. Nandi had solved the problem. Permanently. Chetty Singh drove the Cadillac around the peripheral pathway inside the fence. The fence was in good order. Even the baboon skulls still grinned down from the tops of the corner posts, but the infrared alarms were gone. Chetty Singh had sold them at a good price to a Zambian customer. After Nandi's arrival, they had become redundant. Completing the circuit of the fence, Chetty Singh parked the Cadillac at the rear of the warehouse beside the neat shed of the same corrugated sheeting as the main building. This was obviously a later addition, tacked on as an afterthought to the rear wall of the warehouse. As Chetty Singh stepped out of the Cadillac, his nostrils flared to the faint but rank odour that wafted from the single small window in the shed. This was set high up and was heavily barred. He glanced at Chawi. "Is she safe?" "She is in the small cage, as you ordered, Mumble." Despite the assurance, Chetty Singh peered through the peephole in the door before he opened it and stepped into the shed. The only light came from the high window, and the room was in semi-darkness, made more intense by the contrast of the late sunshine outside. The smell was stronger now, a pungent wild scent, and suddenly from the gloom there was a spitting snarl so vicious that Chetty Singh stepped back involuntarily. "Oh, my goodness!" he chuckled to hide his nerves. "We are in absolute foul metal today." An animal moved behind the bars of the cage, a dark shape on silent pads, and there was a gleam of yellow eyes. "Nandi," Chetty Singh smiled. "The sweet one." Nandi had been the name of King Chaka's mother. Chetty Singh reached out to the switch beside the door, and the fluorescent tube in the ceiling spluttered and then lit the shed with a cold blue light. In the cage, a female leopard shrank away against the far wall, crouching there, staring at the man with murderous eyes, her upper lip lifting in a creased and silent snarl to reveal her fangs. She was a huge cat, over 7 feet from nose to tail, one of the animals from Mahlangye Mountain Forest, who could turn the scale at 120 pounds. A wild creature captured by the old witch doctor. In her maturity, she had once been a notorious goat and dog killer, terrorising the villagers on the slopes of the mountain. Shortly before her capture, she had savagely mauled a young herd boy who had tried to defend his flock against her. The forest cats were darker than those of the open savannah. The jet-black rosettes that dappled her skin were close-set, so that she was close in coloration to the melanistic panther. Her tail curled and flicked like a metronome, the gauge of her temper. She watched the man unblinkingly. The force of her hatred was as thick as the wild animal stench in the small, hot room. "Whoa, are you angry?" Chetty Singh asked, and her lip lifted higher to the sound of his voice. She knew him well. "Not angry enough," Chetty Singh decided, and reached for the cattle prod on the rack beside the light switch. The cat reacted immediately. She knew the sting of the electric prod. Her next snarl was a crackling rattle, and she ran back and forth trying to escape from the torment she had come to expect. At the end, nearest the main wall of the warehouse, the steel mesh cage narrowed into a bottleneck just wide enough to admit the leopard's body. A low tunnel that ended against a steel sliding door in the warehouse wall. The prod was bolted onto a long aluminium pole. Chetty Singh slipped it between the cage bars and reached out to touch the leopard. Her movements became frantic as she tried to avoid the device, and Chetty Singh laughed at her antics as he pursued her around the cage. He was trying to drive her into the bottleneck tunnel. At last she flung herself against the bars of the cage, ripping at the steel with her claws as she tried to reach him, coughing and grunting with fury. But the length of the pole kept Chetty Singh out of range. "Goodness gracious me," he said, and touched the side of her neck with the points of the prod. Blue electricity flashed, and the leopard recoiled from the sting of it and bounded into the tunnel at the end of the cage. Chawe was ready for this, and he dropped the mesh door behind her. Now she was trapped. Her nose was against the steel hatch in the warehouse wall, while at her heels the mesh door prevented her backing away. The tunnel was so low that it almost touched her back, and she could not rear up. It was so narrow that she could not turn her head to protect her heaving flanks. She was helplessly pinioned, and Chetty Singh handed the prod to Chawe.